Next up, we have a gentleman after my own heart. And I'm going to tell you why, because anybody that deals with African studies, we're already friends. I taught African studies for a long time in middle school and high school back in Detroit. So this gentleman is after my own heart. I really appreciate him. Colonel William Wyatt is going to come up, and he's going to give his remarks. You can come up, sir. Thank you. Please give him a hand.
Can you folks hear me? Is that the microphone or is that me? Because I usually don't need a microphone. Okay. All right. All right. So first off, Toyin, thank you very much to you and your team. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to come. Last year when I saw this announced for the first time, I was incredibly disappointed, not at you all, but the fact that I had to teach that week. It was the first week at the War College and they wouldn't let me leave. So this year, the first week is next week, and it doesn't matter anyway because I finished my teaching duties there. So not going to be an issue. But I'll have to be honest before I get started. I feel kind of like I got cheated or set up here. First, Andrew stole some of my thunder with a wonderful presentation earlier today. And I was going to talk to you about some challenges in Africa, but apparently there are none. The Export-Import Bank has solved them all for us. I got to reconsider my entire briefing now. So let me try to get through it as best I can. All right. So with that, I'll try to keep it to my 30 minutes. We'll see how that goes. Some of you know me perhaps from LinkedIn for my presence on there. And you may be surprised to find that I've been rather calm and reserved in my comments on LinkedIn. Some of you might be going, are you crazy? Well, soon I'll be able to say what I really feel about a lot of things in the world. So we'll see what happens. There are restrictions on speech for commissioned officers. We can't be talking ill of politicians. That's not a good sign for healthy democracy. But I'll no longer be a serving officer come 1 October. That is no reference to the current administration. That's a reference to the past five. Anyway, so let me see if I can get this show started. If you don't mind, I'll walk around since I've got the headset on here and make sure I can get this thing going. Oops, went too far. So I'm going to steal a little thunder here from Brady Southwick, who used to run operations for Cummins and their Africa operations, mostly based in South Africa. And this is, he was quoted back in 2010, I believe it was, he was quoted, and he said, Africa's just been a rounding error for us. And I'd like to get that message across to you because that's a phrase I've been using forever. Africa has been a rounding error for the United States in many respects, politically, militarily, and certainly economically, for public and private enterprise for decades. And it's a bit of a challenge. So I don't mean to discourage anybody here because we want to get trade going, but my task is to talk a little bit about the current state, but also to be a little bit mixed in here at the end if I have time about some opportunities, okay? Because that's originally what I was going to talk about, so I've kind of mixed the two of them. Whoops. So that's, obviously, I'm not handling this very well, so we'll see how that goes. All right, so looking at this first chart here, historical engagement with the U.S., I'm not going to be able to, in 30 minutes, cover everything that's happened with the U.S. and Africa. I am going to point out some challenges. It's not a comprehensive list. It's not every challenge that faces us, but there's some key challenges. And I'm going to point out some countries at the end that are potential places to go do investment in a number of different fields. It's not all inclusive. We can argue about it, but these are points to start with, and you can catch me in the hallway and argue with me afterwards if you disagree, because I can't take questions. All right, so on this chart here, excuse me, I've got my tablet here. Apple's not working for me up here. So primarily, U.S. Public engagement has been in the area of aid over the decades, whether that's been economic in the healthcare industry or if it's been in education, but also in security as well, going back through the Cold War. In the 1980s, you get to about 1980, there's a significant amount of U.S. business activity on the continent, but the challenge is that most American businesses have their headquarters in South Africa at this time, and from there they use as a launch pad to go around the continent. There are exceptions, of course, but major businesses are based out of South Africa with their subsidiaries or their partners. But because of divestment in the 1980s, a lot of American businesses left Africa. They left South Africa, and when they left South Africa, effectively many of them simply left Africa. And many of them have not really gotten back in the game, with the exception of some of the major corporations. Traditionally, the United States has been the largest foreign direct investor in Africa and still is one of the top two or three, depending on how you look at the flows of FDI that are going to Africa. But folks are catching up to us. Turkey is putting in half as much FDI as we do right now. It's happening as we speak. One of the big challenges we face here in the historical situation with Africa is, of course, the depiction of Africa and what it is in the West. If you ask a certain generation of Americans about Africa, they remember We Are the World and Live Aid. And that's what they think of Africa. Starving Ethiopians, right? That's an image a lot of people still have in their heads. So I've called this challenge the C cubed. And as I have up there, chaos, corruption, and coup d'etat. A lot of people in the West, in America in particular, this is the image they have of Africa. But that's a dated image. Some of those things are still there, of course, in some places. But 21st century Africa is a very different place, a lot more happening. I don't think I need to share that with you folks here. I'm sure you're well aware of that. But the point is, this is for a different audience as well. The traditional great power competition that took place during the Cold War was a competition between the East and West, played out largely by the Soviet Union and the United States. And as a consequence, there were a lot of proxy wars that took place, particularly in Southern Africa, and got a lot of involvement by the U.S. government in security affairs across the continent. And in that time, our assistance was characterized by aid and security work. So the current state we have here now, there it is. You may have a little trouble reading that chart, so just let me quickly talk. This is the last decade. This is total trade between the U.S. and Africa. What I'd like you to notice is that the U.S. runs a trade deficit historically and habitually with Africa. But look at the figure. 10 years, $223 billion. The United States currently has a $21.5 trillion GDP. This is not a fact that's going to have a major impact on the country. We're arguing with China over $500 million in trade deficit, or $500 trillion in trade deficits. This is much smaller, and it's over 10 years. So it doesn't have a significant impact. But why does the U.S. have this? Well, one of the big reasons is historically most of our trade with Africa has been hydrocarbons, whether it's been petroleum in the Gulf of Guinea or now natural gas off the coast of Mozambique and other places. The Jubilee field in Ghana is coming on stream now and producing, or North Africa with Algeria. So that's been a major part of our trade. And with the price of petroleum being priced in dollars and the market swinging up and down, the value of the trade fluctuates radically. The other challenge with this is that the other thing about U.S. trade is that we don't trade with many countries in the aggregate. Most U.S. businesses are trading in only a few places in Africa. And the Continental Free Trade Agreement that we see coming online now, perhaps it'll help change it. We shall see. I have high hopes, but I remain a bit of a skeptic, so I'll share that a little bit later. Assuming I don't run out of time. So take a look here. Africa's GDP is $2.19 trillion in 2017. The figure, I couldn't get a 2018 figure because it's different places, World Bank, IMF had different figures. But the U.S. GDP is $21.5 trillion. That works out. Now, first off, I'm not a big fan of saying Africa, Africa, Africa. As we've noted today, there are a lot of countries. There are varying degrees of development, varying population sizes. Botswana with 2 million people, Cape Verde with 550,000 people. Not exactly Ethiopia with 100 million people or Nigeria with 196 million people. So just lumping Africa together is challenging. But I think we can all accept that since we're trying to have a continental free trade agreement, that it's okay in some respects to say Africa. But that $1,500 clearly is not the same in South Africa as it is in Botswana, as it is in Togo, as it is in Djibouti. There's huge differences. Nonetheless, just to give you an idea, U.S. GDP per capita is nearly $58,000 per person. For a country of 330 million people, where Africa's got 1.3 trillion people, or billion people, yeah, billion people, excuse me. Now, the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act has been mentioned several times in here today, and I would say that I think it's a fantastic program. The Clinton administration proposed it. It was put in legislation before he left office, one of his final acts, and initially it was about 1,800 products and services that were approved. The Bush administration greatly expanded that to about 6,500 lines of products and services, and got a little loosey-goosey on the governance standards and let some countries qualify for it that maybe shouldn't have qualified for it based on the program's objectives. But nonetheless, it's there to help African countries. I always hear people talk about free trade, and I say, that's great. I'd like free trade. Let's renegotiate AGOA. We have to pay tariffs to put our goods in Africa. Africans don't pay tariffs. The Export-Import Bank has a strategic communications challenge. People don't know they exist. A lot of people don't understand that a lot of African countries can ship their goods here with no duty whatsoever. But some people oversell AGOA. They think it's a panacea. It's not. A lot of that is oil that's traded without tariffs anyway. But the good news is that the products that are not energy related have been growing exponentially in exports to the United States. The problem, though, is the figure is still quite small, even after 20 years. So another challenge, I'm not really going to go into depth here, but I should mention, is that under the new Africa strategy that National Security Advisor Bolton announced last December, the administration has a clear preference for bilateral treaties. Now, we heard the ambassador this morning talking about they would like to have a U.S.-African Union treaty. That would be a smart move, especially since the European Union is trying to move in that direction. So it's something we should work on. But there's a clear preference with the current administration for the moment to do deals on a bilateral basis. Have a deal with Liberia, have a deal with Ghana, have a deal with South Africa. That may work well for the U.S., but it doesn't always work well for those Africans. The U.S. has an enormous advantage when negotiating for trade treaties with individual African countries. The African Union as a whole has a much better bargaining position with the U.S. So will that happen? We shall see. This administration or another? I don't know, but I would hope it does happen. Prosper Africa was announced in December. No substance was given until just a few weeks ago. There's a $50 million program to help and a bunch of other things. Mostly it's aspirational, a lot of goals. I would say that there's a lot of potential with Prosper Africa, but we have to see how it plays out and how it relates to the new development agency and the export-import bank and things like that. But if you look at this chart, you'll see that the total, total trade for the U.S. with Africa is rounding error. When I lived in Liberia, I love Liberia, fascinating place, but there's one thing about Liberians, not an insult, but a lot of Liberians think they're Americans and they expect to live the same way Americans live. But the problem is there's no money in Liberia, not much, because they can't really live like Americans. America is very important to Liberia. I can take 10,000 Americans and probably six have ever heard of Liberia and know anything about it. It's not as important to Americans as it is to Liberians. Trade with the United States is important to Africa, represents about 4% of the continent's aggregate gross domestic product, but it's less than 1% for the U.S. Now, I'm not saying that to say we don't want to trade with Africa. What I'm saying here is potential, lots of potential. We're not doing anything with Africa, relatively speaking. It's a rounding error for most corporations, most businesses, especially small and medium enterprises, which I'm going to talk about briefly. So it's time to get in the game. So U.S. business with Africa, let me talk about this chart here briefly. Mostly disengaged, honestly, except for some major corporations, and few businesses see it as a strategic option. It's a tertiary, a secondary concern. I'm potentially working with an application company right now that makes a voting app for campaigns, political campaigns. They design it for the U.S., and they suddenly found out they have an African market because the Nigerians contacted them for Goodluck Jonathan's campaign, then Buhari's campaign, Ghana contacted them. Next thing you know, they have all this business in Africa. They didn't even think about it. They're drawing a lot of revenue by supporting democratization elections in Africa. This is, I don't want to say there's a lack of vision on the part of the people that ran the company, but what I'm saying is that most U.S. businesses don't look to Africa, and they really should start looking to Africa because, as we've heard repeatedly today, this is the burgeoning market. This is where the consumers are going to come from, and the labor force, too. Consumers and labor force. So hydrocarbons, heavy equipment, think of Caterpillar, Cummings, things like that. They dominate U.S. trade, and that's the high dollar value that adds to the trade amount that we have for exports. And, of course, aircraft. Boeing is a major supplier of aircraft in Africa in competition with Airbus. But we're not really competing effectively. We've got the Export-Import Bank. How many knew of them? You don't have to raise your hand. How many knew about what they do before you walked in here today? A couple people. Not a whole lot, if you're honest, right? And this is people that care about Africa and trade with Africa, right? They're not just for Africa, but this is people care about. So there's a challenge here, a strategic communications challenge that our government needs to get better at. And Prosper Africa really needs to focus on that. So the funny thing about the U.S. not competing well in Africa is that, anybody read African Business? It's one of my favorite magazines. Pretty good, thank you. It's a very good magazine, in my opinion. They do an annual top brands in Africa. I always get a kick out of it because I start reading down a list and I look for African brands that I know. I don't see too many initially. It takes a while. Because who headlines the products on here? America. 100 top brands in Africa, 29 are U.S. companies, U.S. brands, Levi's, Google. Not Starbucks, not yet. So they'll get there eventually. They're in South Africa now. If you've been in the Menlyn Mall in Pretoria, you'll find them. But there are 7 Chinese companies by contrast. And I think most of us probably don't know 3 of them. Hisense for appliances, Huawei for telecommunications, and Lenovo for laptops, which was IBM, but they sold it to the Chinese. So China, which supposedly controls all of Africa, their brands aren't the most popular and respected by Africans. These are African consumers. These are the brands they like. So why aren't we there? Why isn't American business there in full force? Why aren't we doing light manufacturing in Africa? We're manufacturing and shipping these goods there. A lot of this brand recognition is by happenstance. It's good fortune. Some of it's intentional. Coca-Cola, of course, has put lots of money in Africa, all over the continent. So they've had that reputation for years. But a lot of this is just happenstance. We need to take advantage of our brands, a little smarter. Even though the U.S. has dropped recently, it's not because our level of foreign investment has dropped. Anadarko has just announced a $20 billion capital investment in Mozambique for a liquefaction plant. That's a pretty significant impact there. And Ford is expanding operations in South Africa with new jobs in Pretoria. But we still remain high, even though the Chinese are adding more foreign direct investment and others are on the table. So some of the challenges for U.S. business, and this is the bad part here, It's not all inclusive. And before I get any further, I just want to throw this out very quickly. I'm talking fast because I want to get all this out before I get done here. So I don't usually go this fast, although I'm a fast talker. One thing I didn't put on this chart is productivity. This is an issue that people don't talk about. This morning we heard about the informal market, which is almost always overlooked, and that's a critical component when you think about consumers in Africa. The informal market can be a marketplace for your goods or your services, even though it's not a formal market. But productivity is a challenge. Anybody that wants to do business in Africa, you have to have a clear head, you have to be honest about the challenges, and you need to look at productivity. I've lived all over the continent, Tunisia, Liberia, Botswana, Malawi, Nigeria, Mauritania, Uganda, Ethiopia, all those countries, and I've worked in about 40 of them so far. And there are varying levels of productivity across the continent. Productivity is a huge challenge for an American business going over there if you're not expecting it. If you want to start, say, a security firm with guards, you're going to want to make sure that you put in your calculations, your capital layout, training, and repeated training of your workforce, because you're going to get a workforce that's probably not familiar with that task or is not efficient at it. So you have to put the money into that. So, of course, weak manufacturing sector, we know about that. And the challenge there is if you start a business or you get a business going in Africa, you may have to rely on imports for your supply chain because the supply chains are weak or non-existent for many different industries, many production. You can't simply put a McDonald's in Togo. No offense against Togo, but McDonald's likes to source all their stuff from the country they're in. And are they going to be able to get the dairy products, the meat, the cheese, the onions, all the products they want? If you go to Switzerland, they used to be very proud. McDonald's would have all their placemats, all the places in Switzerland where everything in the store came from. Everything McDonald's, including the paper napkins, came from Switzerland. The supply chains are not that fully established. You talked about supply chains earlier this morning. This is an opportunity for American business. Become that supply chain. Become part of that supply chain. Now, of course, internal instability. This is a short list, and there's varying degrees of internal instability here. And no insult to South Africa. Where's Shakir at? Is she up there? No insult to South Africa, but that's up because we have to be honest about South Africa. If I wasn't American, the only thing I want to be South African. For those who don't know that much about me, absolutely love South Africa. I've loved it for decades. But I see South Africa clearly. There are security challenges internally in the country. South Africa has over 500,000 security guards. Country of 55 million, 57 million people. Over 500,000 people perform security services every day. That's an astounding number of people. Business opportunity if you want to get in the security business. But also a cost of doing business because you need that security. That's a consideration. Supply chain management, I've mentioned a couple times. Financing, that's solved. Thank you, Export Import Bank. We're done. We'll move on from there. No, it remains a challenge. But the good news when it comes to financing is that this game is changing too. Can anybody remember in the past when an African country had the resources and the confidence of the marketplace to announce a $3 billion bond issue and then have it oversubscribed 6 times? Ghana just sold bonds for 7, 11, and 31 years. And people oversubscribed them by billions of dollars. $3 billion bond issue. They sold out like that. They want to issue 100-year bonds. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not buying 100-year bonds from anybody. Not that I don't trust the Ghanaians, but I'm not waiting 100 years to get my money back. Actually, they pay interest as it goes. So anyway, and you sell the instrument to your heirs or someone else. But the point is that if Ghana can do that, that's a good sign that things are improving the finance area. Aside from all these government efforts, that's private sector. That government's putting money out there, but that money's coming from the private sector. And people aren't just putting money there because there's oil in the Jubilee field. There's other things happening in the economic environment, macroeconomic environment, Ghana, that's giving investors encouragement. So, a couple more challenges, then we'll move on. So this one, and this is where, while I'm very happy about the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, I'm very concerned about it too. This is an ongoing issue. Weak legal systems, dispute settlement, right to redress. If you don't have the Export-Import Bank insuring your shipments and someone doesn't pay you, can you go to a court in Senegal and get a resolution at all or in a timely fashion? Do the courts function in every country? Let's be honest, a lot of countries, they don't function. A lot of countries, they're corrupt. A lot of countries, they do function, okay? I'm not trying to slam all these countries, but this is fundamental to business. You take a lot of risk if you don't have the ability to have a redress for grievances or for disputes and settlements. You have to have a mechanism for this, and this is a challenge. High transaction cost. The average credit card transaction in the United States, the merchant pays between 1.6 and 2.3%. So when you pay the hotel here, they're paying the bank that amount. South Africa, the average transaction is 5%. Whoa! You talk about a cost of business? That's insane. Why is that? Because the South African banks, well, this is personal opinion, we can dispute this. South African banks have a monopoly on the market. There's several big banks that really control the marketplace, and they set the rates. In fact, years ago, you couldn't even buy petrol in South Africa with a credit card. You use a debit card, but not a credit card. Since I lived in Botswana, I had to carry a bag full of cash every time I went to South Africa to fill up my 4Runner because it was a V8, used a lot of petrol. Anyway, the point is that high costs of doing business, these are costs that people overlook. These are things that people that don't know the business environment don't think about. But that's a cost of doing business. And it's real. We have to be honest about that. It's good to talk wonderful about Africa, and I love Africa, but we have to be honest about this. Now, is this Africa's fault? No, there's challenges. That's why it's like this. Or there's monopolies. All right, so artificial barriers, border crossings. we were talking to the folks from Togo last night. I was mentioning it was the longest border crossing I ever had. I spent 3.5 hours at that border crossing because I wouldn't pay a bribe, and they wanted a bribe from me. I didn't pay the bribe. Eventually, I got across. And I had a diplomatic passport, by the way, too, when I was traveling. So there you go. Not a slam on Togo, but this is something that happens. Plus, long clearances, right? In the East African community, there's been a big effort to clear these blocks and get vehicles through a lot faster, trucks and things like that. But if I go to Kazungulu between Zambia and Botswana, you will see trucks lined up for 4 or 5 days. Can't get across the border to clear customs. Now, is that because Botswana is inefficient? Maybe, but they're pretty efficient at most things, so I think there's something else going on there. But that leads to all kinds of other things, including social ills. What do bored truck drivers do who are sitting in their trucks for 3 or 4 days do? Some people need to make money, and then we get a trade in something that's illicit. And of course, that in that case of Botswana has helped spread HIV for a number of years. So not to digress into that, but when you have delays in business, it has other impacts. State-owned enterprises. I can talk about this forever. Now, I put 2 state-owned enterprises up there to show you an example of how both can affect your private business. So we have South African Airways. The government in Pretoria just gave them this year $564 million for another bailout. They also own Mango, one of the low-cost carriers. If a government is supporting a national airline and keeping it in business when it has become inefficient and allowing them to sell tickets at below cost, for instance, maybe that's not what they're doing, but I'm just making an example, what does that do to impact your business? That's competition. Now, let me give you another. Ethiopian Airlines was once run that way. But a couple decades ago, the government said, no, this isn't working out so well. So they let the airline, even though it's state-owned, run as a private commercial enterprise. And it's run for profit. And it's one of the most effective airlines in the world. And they're spread, sorry? Very successful. Thank you. Ethiopian has 117 aircraft, flies to 125 destinations for passengers. South African Airlines, in the same time that this took place, their expansion, has spread in Africa, but it hasn't grown at the same pace. And it's no longer profitable, and it hasn't been for a number of years. It's been in the red for several years. They only have 44 aircraft for South African Airways. They had the same number of aircraft 25 years ago. South African Airways was a profitable airline when it wasn't allowed to land anywhere in Africa because of apartheid. They couldn't land in Africa, if you remember that. Apartheid ended, they were primed for expansion. But guess who expanded? Ethiopian. Because it's run like a private commercial enterprise. But what's the impact there? They are supported by the state. Whenever there's a diplomatic event, the government official's there, the Ministry of Trade is there, promoting Ethiopian Airlines. So they get some free assistance that you won't get as a private corporation necessarily. So state-owned enterprises can be something that affect your business in Africa. And then, of course, we have laws in the United States that if you commit fraud, or even abroad, or if you are involved in bribes and corruption, we can prosecute you for that. Not me, but somebody in Washington or a different state. That doesn't necessarily affect all of our competitors abroad. I won't mention any countries, China. sorry, I had a little build up there. Oh, geez. So with all that bad news, why would you choose Africa? Lots of reasons. The U.S. government, Washington, D.C., our federal government is interested in Africa for access and influence. We want friends in the United Nations when things come up. We want to work well. We want prosperity in Africa. That's one of the reasons why I have AGOA. We habitually come out on the losing end of AGOA when it comes to dollar trade. We have a trade deficit with Africa. But we don't care because it's a small amount of money to help achieve prosperity for Africa. It costs us very little to help achieve a strategic objective. That's why we do it. But most of the world doesn't know that. Private sector represents opportunity. Lots of opportunity. We've heard it earlier. 2.5 billion people going to be on the continent, or 2.3, 2.5 by 2050. That's a lot of nappies. That's a lot of binkies. That's a lot of Oshkosh pants if Oshkosh gets its act together. And that's a heck of a lot of Frappuccinos if we convince people to buy that stuff. If $5 a Frapp, but they won't be in plastic cups, though. Can't do that. So let's see what else. Africa, of course, has some of the fastest growing economies. You've heard that earlier. Senegal is one of them, Rwanda habitually. Mozambique was one of the fastest growing economies for 30 years. But they grew from nothing because of their civil war, from a low base. And that's one of the things going on here. These countries, a lot of them are growing from a low base, so there's a lot of potential, exponential potential for growth, potentially, in the right business environment. Exploding population, rapidly growing consumer class. I heard someone give a figure earlier that was higher than that. I think their figure is more correct. I went with a conservative figure because it depends on how you define what a consumer class is or middle class. For me, it's people who have disposable income. They pay their bills, they can take care of other things. Improved governance. Now, democracy isn't synonymous with good governance. I'm not claiming that. Just making a point here that compared to 30 years ago, when only about a quarter of the countries in Africa were multi-party democracies, over almost two-thirds of them are today. And they tend to be better behavior and better business environments if it's a multi-party democracy. Not a guarantee. Mobile telephony, of course. We leapfrogged the plain old telephone system, the POTS, which really hampered Africa for decades. The inability to have telecommunications and having phone networks were only in the capital. Mobile telephones have really changed. And now smartphones and 5G come along. Big changes. So the last one here, why choose Africa? This effort for economic integration. I'm not overly thrilled across the board with the performance of the regional economic communities or the RECs, ECOWAS, SADC, EAC, EGAD, things like that. They have varying degrees of success and failures, and they've achieved some things, not achieved other things. But they've essentially not achieved the goal that they were set up to do. Regional integration, removal of trade barriers, and economic prosperity. I don't think any of those have been achieved in these regions across the board. So I'm not saying you throw them out. They're integral to the African Union, but they haven't achieved what they wanted. Then along came the tripartite free trade area. I was excited about that. That's half of Africa geographically, all under one free trade area. It's been about 6 or 7 years. It's in effect. It's been negotiated for that long. We're not seeing much out of that, and then the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement kind of confused the issue when that came along. So hopefully, this will make progress. But there are challenges with it. Just because there's an agreement doesn't mean we're going to make progress. I think eventually we will, and hopefully we'll make it faster than slower. Now, I'm almost at the end. I have the last chart where I'm going to offer you some what I call lily pads for investment. So things are changing in Africa for the U.S. and the U.S. investment environment. So we're no longer the largest trade partner. That should be news to anybody. China surpassed us a few years ago. But you might be interested to find out that China, when it reached nearly $200 billion a year in trade with Africa, that's now dropped back by about $40 or $60 billion. Now, why is that? Commodity prices cratered a few years ago. And most of what they're buying are commodities, not finished goods from Africa. We buy some finished goods from Africa, but the Chinese don't buy much in the way of finished goods from Africa. Aid has fallen into disrepute. Demia Moiso's, I always get her name wrong. Thank you, Demisa Moyo. Her book on dead aid and several other things came out. People have argued against aid. I've never been a big fan of aid. I mean, I'm not a big devout Christian, but, you know, teach a man to fish, you know, buy him a fish thing. So I'm kind of in a boat with her. I don't know that that aid is the answer. But trade isn't the only answer. That's part of the answer. This new scramble for Africa, someone mentioned that earlier. We got a whole bunch of competitors, which the United States doesn't even realize. I talk to audiences, and I tell them about Turkey and Africa, and they look at me like, Turkey? What's Turkey doing in Africa? The United States has the largest number of diplomatic missions across Africa. A lot of people assume it's the UK or France because of their historical colonial roles. Nope. It's the United States. Number two, Turkey. They've increased their number of diplomatic missions and trade officers in their missions exponentially. Not exponentially. They've doubled, tripled it the last 15 years. Turkey is doing lots of stuff, particularly in Ethiopia and in Somalia. Billions of dollars investment. $28 billion in FDI last year, I think, was their total. I got a chart coming up. Is it here? Or $23 billion. Here it is. $23 billion. That's trade. I'm sorry. That's not FDI. FDI was almost a billion. Yeah, sorry. I got that backwards. China, of course, we know that. Russia, a lot of people are freaking out about Russia. I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep about your business over Russia, unless you're selling arms. That's all they got really to offer. They haven't got much more behind. Or if you want some, you know, some really bad antivirus software that sends all your data to Russia called Kaspersky. You could partner with the Russians then. I did say I was kind of reserved in my comments, didn't I? Okay. India. India is an emerging partner, and in part because of the Indian diaspora. There's a lot of Indians in Africa, and they're not just in Kenya. Botswana has a lot of Indians. South Africa has a lot of people, Indian subcontinent. There's historical links there, familial ties, and that's one reason. But India is also looking for markets abroad. You'll find Tata doing business in Africa, selling motor vehicles, trucks, and things like that. Turkey, as I mentioned. Brazil, people talk about Brazil a lot, but their trade volumes haven't changed much of late. So I'm not so sure they're a major competitor for y'all. Morocco. Morocco's a competitor? Yes. Moroccans have been brilliant. The king has supported an investment strategy focused on West Africa, focused on ECOWAS. You notice how Morocco, which left the Organization for African Unity over the Western Sahara question, joined the African Union without resolving the Western Sahara issue. Funny that. Funny, money makes good strange bedfellows. But Morocco is back, it's in the AU, and they're playing a role because they see their future in Africa. They're smart. The king and his government know what's going on in Africa. They're not missing a boat. Washington's missing the boat. China. Calm down, guys, calm down. Morocco sees the boat. Africa, not focused on China. We gotta focus on China for other reasons, but not because of Africa. So the Moroccans are brilliant. Moroccan insurance companies have spread all over West Africa. They've purchased local businesses, they've established their own businesses, and they're generating revenues, and they're profitable. Where's AIG in Africa? USAA. Well, that's unfair because it's oriented to the military market, but who's the Snoopy one? MetLife. Where are they at? They're not in Africa. Why not? Lack of vision. It's where the market's at, folks. It's where the market's at, and that's where the market's going to be at. They're missing it. South Africa, I leave up there because South Africa still remains one of the largest foreign direct investors across Africa. You can't go to Uganda and not see the presence of South Africa. Everywhere you go, ShopRite, all these other businesses, things like that, South African businesses are there. So they are still a major FDI, even though they've got challenges at home. I'll pick up the pace here so I don't spend too much more time. So foreign direct investment, let me see if there's highlights I want to talk about here. For the U.S., I just mentioned Anadarko, $20 billion, right? A lot of our foreign direct investment is tied to the energy sector. That needs to change. We need to invest in other things. Concentrated in 5 countries off that chart that I pilfered there. It is picking up this year after Cyril Ramaphosa had a big conference for investing in Africa and South Africa. Amazon Web Services announced a cloud computing center in South Africa. Ford just announced 1,200 new jobs at their assembly plant in Pretoria. And so it is picking up a little bit, and I mentioned the Anadarko there. But we have top brands. Caterpillar is known all over Africa. Coca-Cola is known all over Africa. Even McDonald's, even though it's only in a few countries in Africa, like Morocco and South Africa, and KFC, but mostly in Southern Africa. The United States has 5.6 million employer firms in 2016, but only 30,000 companies that have employees in this country are doing any sort of business in Africa. Now, that's a couple years ago. I think it's 2012, that statistic's from, but it's not much larger than that. Can you imagine less than 50,000 of our companies do any sort of business with Africa? You talk about potential for growth. That has a lot of potential, And when I mention apps and names, Sprint, AT&T. Yeah, you remember them growing up in Africa, right? I don't. They're not there. Comcast, they're not there. It's all left to MultiChoice, right? They're the only ones that got the service. Now the Chinese have got a satellite service in Africa, too. We're missing out there. Charles Schwab. Africans buy stocks. They're stock exchanges, South Africa. Many other places. Botswana's got a stock exchange. Why aren't American brokerage and financial services in Africa? Why leave it to just South Africans and Mauritians? All right, so the lily pad approach. Let me get through this very quickly. Here we go. So this is just quick. This is an all-inclusive. You may not agree with this, but I just want to throw a few countries up there very fast to show you some ideas for places, different industries you might want to consider going to get into a part of Africa and use this base to get established and go from there. So first one I want to talk about, I gotta get to work again, is Mauritius. So Mauritius was mentioned earlier a couple times. Fantastic location off the southeast coast of Africa behind Madagascar there. Telecoms, banking, insurance, wonderful sector. And textiles is very successful there, but that's a pretty saturated market at this point. So you might not want to look at that. Rwanda. We've heard Rwanda mentioned many times. I put the population up there. That's what it is. 1.2 million in Mauritius, 11.2 million in Rwanda. Just to give you an idea of the scale of the countries and potential marketplaces. Rwanda is an excellent launching place to get into the East African community and East Africa, and potentially Central Africa if the Congo ever gets sorted out, which probably won't happen anytime soon. But East Africa, certainly. Volkswagen has just committed money to build an assembly plant there and build cars in Rwanda. Good luck to them. I hope it goes well. Come on. So Botswana, I mentioned earlier, Botswana is in the Southern African Customs Union. It's in SADC. It's on the doorstep of South Africa. And if you're honest and you look at this objectively, let's be honest, Southern Africa, much of it is simply an extension of the South African economy as a consequence of history. Namibia, Botswana, Swaziland, Lesotho, even Mozambique and Zimbabwe and Zambia, to some respects, are full of South African businesses. You go into Botswana, which has a good business climate. It only takes a couple days to establish a business and get it going. Low cost of doing business there. You're right next door to South Africa. Get your business successful there in a place you can do business effectively. Consider expanding next door. IT, telecommunications, insurance, pharmaceuticals. Aspen Pharmaceuticals is a pharmaceutical company in South Africa that's only a couple decades old, and they're a multi-billion dollar company now. Proof that you can do pharmaceuticals in Africa. Horticulture, the former president wanted to do that. That's something that's there. Cape Verde, a much smaller economy off the northwest coast of Africa. This thing is not cooperating with me. I'm doing it wrong. There it is. Good for tourism, potentially light manufacturing, very small market, but potentially another launch pad. One of the challenges being small size, off the continent, and also it's a Lusophone country, so that might distract some folks. Morocco is a great business opportunity. Lots going on there. Morocco has enough money that they spent $300 million buying M1 Abrams tanks from the U.S. government. We didn't give them to them. We didn't give them grants. They bought them from us, $300 million. They had that kind of money. They're also concerned about the security, but that's why they bought it. And then the last one I want to show in here is Senegal. A lot of people don't talk about Senegal, but Senegal has an excellent business environment, and they're very committed to business. It's not a major market size-wise, 15 million, not a particularly wealthy country, but it's a very well-run country, very straightforward place, and it's also in ECOWAS, and it gets you into West Africa. So that's another potential one there. And I think that's, God bless it. Sorry, there it is. All right, so that's quote. Very quickly, if I can, Twain, I just a couple points I want to share with folks. I didn't put these on a slide, but I did save them on my pad. So if I can negotiate my Apple product, I'm not an Apple fan, by the way. Not that I like Microsoft, they're not much better. Shysters, man, I don't like Microsoft at all. Anyway, we just subjected to that, so we're stuck with. Unix missed the boat. Anyway, so just a moment, sorry. Appreciate your patience here. I had this open, but like I said, it's Apple, so who knows. All right, so here we go. It's almost there. Just a couple points I want to put. So I put down some keys to success, what I believe are keys to success if you want to do business in Africa. First off is find a good starting point or a hub for a hub. That's what this was, just an effort to give you some ideas. All right. This gets you in a safe marketplace, and it gives you a launching pad to establish a business and get it going from there if you want to expand. The good news with the regional economic community is it gives you an opportunity to spread in countries beyond that. And with the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, potentially the whole continent. We'll see. But as it's been mentioned by the ambassador and others, it's a big con. It takes a while to get across it. Local partners. Nothing wrong with partnering up with local firms. There are lots of entrepreneurs and established businesses in Africa that are in business, profitable, and doing things. Even in the informal sector, which was mentioned earlier. Look at that. You'll have to draw them into the formal sector if you want to do formal business. But don't ignore that. So look for a local partner, but do your research. Do your due diligence. All right? Just because someone comes up to you with a nice deal or they look promising doesn't mean they can fulfill on it. So you got to use your good judgment there. Or local acquisitions. That's what the Moroccans are doing in the insurance business. They're buying up insurance businesses all over Africa. And they're doing it well. And by the way, they're providing a service to Africans. People die, they're paying out their life insurance policy. Things like that. So look for local acquisitions. That's a good way to do business too. And then leverage Prosper Africa. Right? It has the potential to be something very useful for business. And we'll see what happens there. And just one or two last notes here before I get off the stage. Toyin, thank you for your patience and your time. Is when I first started going to Africa about 3 decades ago, it was incredibly frustrating. Well, unless I want a few days of vacation in Europe. Because you couldn't get to Africa, right? The only place you get to Africa from the U.S. is fly through Senegal on Delta to South Africa or South African Airways. And you could fly to Egypt. That was about it. There's a lot of options now. You know that today, let's see, I checked just to make sure I wasn't missing any of these airlines because I haven't flown all of them recently. But today we have Delta, South African, Egypt Air, Ethiopian, of course, which flies the Dreamliner. Nice flight, by the way. Royal Air Maroc. Royal Air Maroc is flying direct flights from the U.S. to Casablanca once a week. Kenya Airways and Cape Verde Airlines all fly from the United States to Africa. That's a sea change. Now, it's a long way to go, but it's a sea change. And even more importantly for you, if you're doing business in Africa, and you're an American company, you can get around Africa now. When I needed to go from Ghana to Ivory Coast, I had to fly to France. They're right next to each other. Or I had to spend 15 hours along the coast. Sorry, dental work gets paid for. It's covered by the military. But anyway, the point is that you have options now. It's good dental work. Anyway, so you have a lot of options that we didn't have before. Telecommunications, internet, all these things have shrunk the world and are opening up possibilities. And I am telling you that from my perspective, having lived in all these countries in Africa over the last 3 decades and just a couple years ago, and having visited so many more places in Africa and dealt with businesses who work for me or who I hired or fired, I am telling you that American business, by and large, is missing the boat, with the exception of some major corporations. And even for them, it's not a major issue. Companies should look at Africa as a strategic option and one of their key focus areas for growth in the future. And I could talk for the rest of the day, but we have things to do, and you've been very patient, even though I spoke very fast to get this all out. So I thank you, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.